Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. Today on Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to be talking about the deteriorating financial position of many hospitals and health systems across the country that are dealing with the impact of the coronavirus outbreak. And we'll be talking about how the outbreak is affecting both healthcare executives and employees on a personal financial level. As always, our resident experts to comment on these topics are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Gary Bisbee, co-founder and executive chairman of the Health Management Academy. Hello, gentlemen. How are you holding up during your respective shelter-at-home orders?
My hair is getting really long.
Holding up well. Thanks, Dave.
Gary, do you need a trim?
I do need a trim. I don't have as much hair as my esteemed colleague, Dave Johnson, but I still need a trim.
Okay, we'll work on that. All right, Dave, why don't we start? Let's talk about how the outbreak is affecting the financial positions of many hospitals and health systems across the country, as well as a lot of medical practices. What have you seen that you think will be temporary, and what have you seen that you think will be permanent?
Thanks, Dave. And you're absolutely right. Health systems are just getting crushed right now. You know, Quorum contemplating bankruptcy is probably the tip of the iceberg. The fact that they're losing elective surgeries, that they're having to pay more money for supplies and for staff while simultaneously responding to all the dimensions of the crisis is just a crushing burden. But your point about there being the need for having both a shorter term and a longer term strategy, I don't think could be more on point. Shorter term, there's a need to respond to the crisis, create maximum financial flexibility, given the pressure. Obviously, to the extent possible, take advantage of the government program, support programs, and so on, and have your heads down, crisis management, great communication, all of that, building surge capacity, getting testing in place. You got to do all of that. And it's really hard, and it's 24/7. But the really scary thing, I think, for health systems is that this COVID-19 pandemic is accelerating the change toward market-driven health reform, the emergence of new technologies, apps and so on, to ease connection in this time of where it's difficult to make connection, the expansion of telemedicine services being done not in just the traditional ways, but in asynchronous ways that can scale quickly and massively, to me indicate that the world will be different from a service perspective once COVID-19 is behind us, and that the customer revolution in healthcare is coming faster than we might otherwise have expected. So that gets me to the kind of last point. I don't think leadership has ever been more important among healthcare systems, because you need a leadership team that can simultaneously respond to the crisis without getting so enmeshed in it that they lose the longer term implications of how market dynamics are shifting in fundamental ways. So we need our leaders to lead better more than ever.
Great, Dave. Thanks. Gary, how would you assess the financial impact that the outbreak's having on provider short-term and long-term?
Let me stick with the financial question. So I'm going to make 4 points. One is the regional nature of COVID-19 outbreak. The next is operating income for the health systems and hospitals. Third is Medicare advances. And the fourth is large versus small health systems. On the regional side, obviously, we know there's a substantial difference. If you look at the financial condition of hospitals and health systems in New York City, for example, and the other areas of major outbreak, it's substantially more fragile than in parts of the country where the outbreak hasn't been as pronounced. Second, if you look at the operating income of our largest health systems in particular, really it's made up of investment portfolio gains and elective surgery. well, we're not going to see much in the way of investment portfolio gains for some time, certainly not nearly as much as historically has been the case. And then in elective surgery, virtually all the health systems and hospitals have discontinued it. So those two together are substantially causing instability, weakness on the part of the financial condition of the providers. Onto the Medicare advances, so right off the bat, when they come, which isn't exactly clear, although government is moving quickly here, but there's obviously a cash flow problem. They've been encountering substantial expenses. They've mentioned even greater than normal because of this COVID-19. And it's been difficult for them. The large ones can obtain massive credit facilities to draw down upon. The smaller ones are going to have difficulty with that. But the Medicare advances aren't coming synchronously with the expenses. And that's going to be a problem for the foreseeable future. Maybe over 18 to 24 months, things will even out, balance out. But one has to wonder whether that, in fact, is the case. And then the large versus small, this is a case where the hospital industry has, over the last 25 years, spent considerable resources to consolidate. And it's paying off in a circumstance like this. The large ones can survive. The small ones are going to have difficulty surviving. So we'll see how this plays out, but one imagines more M&A, more partnerships going forward.
Dave, any follow-up to Gary's 4 points there?
I agree with all four and would amplify the last one, that I think this will accelerate consolidation. And it will do it in a way that I believe the smarter systems will be able to think differently about facilities and partnerships, so that as weaker systems exit the scene, the smarter ones will become more platform oriented. I guess the other point I'd make related to the portfolio observation that Gary made is, I've always thought that the portfolio was there primarily to assist in operations and not to be run as a separate investment fund. So whenever you get this type of cash flow pressure, I think it brings back the reality that health systems are primarily operating companies. They aren't investment companies. And the need to align investments with operations is critical.
Yeah, I agree with that, Dave. And after 08, 09, when that was, you were an investment banker in those days, that was a substantial issue, the imbalance between their mission and how they operated their investment fund. I think that's changed a lot, don't you think? I mean, it's a lot more conservative now than it was then.
Well, I'm not as much in touch since I don't bank anymore, but my sense is you're right. It's gotten more conservative, but it's funny how people have a tendency to forget history. And the lure of high returns with turns in the fixed income market and the cash market so low is hard to resist. So my guess is that you're generally right, but there'll be some grievous examples of organizations that have gone too long.
Well, why don't we move on to our second topic today, and that's taking this financial discussion to a more personal level. You know, every day we're hearing stories about healthcare workers being let go, furloughed, taking pay cuts, or in a lot of cases being asked to work free. And we're also reading stories about hospital and health system CEOs taking pay cuts or forgoing their entire salaries and using that money to pay employees. Gary, what's been the impact on the healthcare workforce? What's been the impact on the healthcare C-suite in a personal financial perspective?
I think if you use one word, it would be stress. Everybody's under stress. And if you look at the caregivers, think about their own health, about their family health. A number of the hospitals and health systems are actually setting up grocery stores now so that they can obtain groceries. A lot of these caregivers are working huge number of hours a day and a week.
Dave, what similarities and differences do you see between the top and bottom pay grades and pay scales at hospitals and health systems during the outbreak?
I think Gary's point about how many CEOs are taking pay cuts is a really honorable attempt to create a shared sense of destiny with their frontline teams that are really going above and beyond in heroic ways. At the same time, compensation in healthcare mirrors the issues that we have in larger society where there's an expanding income gap. And it's hard not to imagine that there won't be more bottom-up pressure to increase compensation for frontline healthcare workers, and properly so. Let's just hope as that dynamic unfolds that organizations are able to maintain enough flexibility. We don't want to see predetermined staffing rules, for example, or ordained staffing rules, are able to maintain enough strategic operating flexibility so they can adapt their business models to changing market dynamics. Strategic flexibility is everything over the next 5 to 10 years.
Gary, anything to add to today's comment, especially on the those staffing rules? What sort of usefulness will they have in the future after this outbreak subsides?
Well, Dave used the word flexible, and that is the operating word. I think the two come out of any discussion about workers and health facilities is the point about stress and the point about flexibility. So that is the name of the game. I agree with Dave. And that's one thing I think we'll see a major point coming out of the lessons we learned and how we react to the coronavirus situation is, in fact, flexibility in terms of our people.
Dave, what part of leadership is that? What does that demonstrate to the frontline caregivers?
I think most importantly, Dave, it demonstrates a sense of shared destiny that we're all in this together, and that it's almost the type of servant leadership that leaders recognizing the organization really can't achieve its objectives, particularly in these crisis situations, unless the leadership itself is serving the frontline workers in a way that allows them to really deliver the best care in the best way in real time.
Great. Thanks, Dave. It will certainly be interesting to see what the long-term effect will be on healthcare employees from the top to the bottom of every organization. Now let's talk about next week. Gary, give me one or two sentences on what you think will be the big story next week in healthcare.
I'd like to think it's recovery and having the executives, our health systems, think about recovery. I don't think we're there yet. So I think we're going to continue to press forward as we have. A lot of the places that aren't yet in a hot spot will become that. And it looks like New York is beginning finally to tail off. So that's a good thing. But it's hard to see that coronavirus outbreak in some way, shape, or form won't be key to our discussion next week.
Great. Dave, same thing. Give me a few sentences on what the big story will be next week.
Yeah, I think Gary's got it right. We're still fighting the five-alarm fire, but there's been enough progress that thoughtful leaders are beginning to think about how do we come out of this in a way that's both safe and productive. And I expect that by this time next week, we'll be talking a lot more about that.
Well, great, gentlemen. Thank you. That's all we have time for today. As always, I appreciate your comments and your insights. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed today, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.